And hello, everyone. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and I'd like to thank you for joining the Public Health Data Systems Task Force. We have a guest presenter with us today, and I'd like to thank them for joining us today. All task force meetings are open to the public, and your feedback is always welcomed, either in the Zoom chat or during the public comment period that is scheduled at about 11:50 Eastern Time this morning. I'm going to begin roll call of our task force members. When I call your name, please indicate that you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Jillian Haney.
Good morning, present.
Arianne Malik.
Good morning.
Rochelle Bolton.
Good morning.
Hans Bootendeck.
Good morning.
Heather Cook Sinclair. Aaron Holt Coyne.
Good morning.
Charles Cross. Steve Eichner.
Present. Good morning.
Joe Gibson.
Good morning.
Raj Gopati.
Good morning.
Tim Jurgis. John Kansky.
Good morning.
Bryant Thomas Karras.
Hello, everybody.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Jennifer Layden. Leslie Leonard. Hung Lu.
Good morning.
Mark Morostica.
Present. Good morning.
Aaron Neary.
Good morning.
Alexandra Muggy.
Good morning.
Stephen Murphy.
Good morning.
Elio Oliveira.
Good morning.
Jamie Pina.
Present. Good morning.
Abby Sears. Vivian Singletary. Bill Sutherland.
Good morning.
And Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much. And now please join me in welcoming Arianne and Jillian for their opening remarks.
Good morning. So we are at the end of our F criteria. This is the last of our series of panels where we talk about the state of healthcare standards associated with the F criteria. We're down to F7, which is transmission to public health agencies for healthcare survey data. Our intent, and we'll talk about this at the end of the meeting, is also to follow this up with one more panel on public health data systems technology vendor focused panel, really hearing from the folks who build and deploy public health data systems. But the action after this meeting moves firmly into getting through all of the input and feedback that we've gotten, synthesizing that into recommendations. And so we'll spend a good amount of time here focused on the task force topics worksheet. So, we have this important panel initially to talk about healthcare surveys, which occupy a somewhat different niche in the public health data systems and standards landscape. And I think we'll hear a little bit about how healthcare survey data is special in just a moment. We'll get through the discussion on healthcare surveys and then get into the task force topics discussion. So with that, I'm gonna turn it over to Jillian. Anything more you wanna add? And then we can get into the panel or the discussion.
No, not really. I think these surveys are looking at the more of the provider universe of health data versus versus population health. So as you mentioned, it is a little bit different. Our presenter today is Carol DeFrancis from the Division of Healthcare Statistics at CDC's National Center for Health Statistics. Welcome, Carol, and the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you so much. Can you bring up my presentation, please? Great. I'm very pleased to be here to discuss the national healthcare surveys, which are conducted by my division at NCHS. Next slide, please. The national healthcare surveys are a family of nationally representative surveys that examine healthcare provided across a wide spectrum of care, from ambulatory to hospital to outpatient and long-term care. They are establishment surveys, not household surveys. The unit of analysis for these surveys is the patient visit or encounter, not the actual patient. They provide estimates of the universe of encounters with providers, not the population. Historically, patient-level data has been abstracted from medical or administrative data. They also include healthcare provider surveys to understand this population's experience providing care. Participation in the national healthcare surveys is voluntary. Next slide, please. This is a very busy slide, but it shows the spectrum of care covered by the National Healthcare Surveys. I'm quickly just going to just highlight the surveys. We currently have five that are active, two physician surveys, the National Ambulatory Medical Care Survey, or NAMCIS, that collects data from physician offices and health centers. We have the National Electronic Health Record Survey, NERS, which collects data on adoption and use of electronic health records, and we partner with ONC on the survey. We have two hospital surveys, the National Hospital Ambulatory Medical Care Survey, which collects currently just emergency department data, and we also have the National Hospital Care Survey that collects inpatient data and emergency department data. And then we also have a long-term care survey, the National Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Study, or MPALS. MPALS covers seven long-term care sectors. For five of the sectors, we buy data from CMS. In two of the sectors, residential care communities and adult day service centers, we do original data collection. The Hospital Care Survey and the National Ambulatory Medical Care Survey are our first surveys to move to EHR data collection for patient encounters. Next slide, please. Examples of the data that are collected, we collect facility and practice level information. And then for the encounter, we collect patient data, demographics, and we also collect personal identifiers for NAMCIS and also hospital care, such as name, address, social security number. We use that data to link to the National Death Index, CMS data, and HUD data, and also to trace repeat visits and hospitalizations. And then there's encounter information, reason for visit, diagnoses, and procedures. Next slide, please. The users of our data are varied: students, researchers, the media, and policymakers. And the data are disseminated in a variety of ways. We put out preliminary data during COVID-19. We have public use files. We have restricted use files that are available through the NCHS Research Data Network. We produce reports. Our data are used in peer-reviewed journal articles that we write and also that researchers write. And also the data appear in official government reports such as CDC's MWRs and also Health US. Next slide, please. We have leveraged both standards and federal regulations to move to EHR data collection. The first HL7 standard that we used was Clinical Document Architecture, or the CDA standard. Our latest CDA release 3 is streamlined by dropping lower importance data elements and aligns with US CDI. To keep abreast of where EHRs are headed, we have developed the healthcare FHIR content IG that is currently being balloted by HL7. Our FHIR content IG is also aligned with US CDI. This content IG works together with the CDC MedMorph reference architecture to automatically extract data from providers' EHR and send it to a CDC endpoint. By using the MedMorph reference architecture, we are aligning ourselves with other CDC programs that are using it, such as electronic case reporting and cancer reporting, which will hopefully reduce burden for both providers and EHR vendors. We've also leveraged the CMS Promoting Interoperability Program. We have about 95,000 providers and 350 hospitals that have registered their intent to send EHR data to NCHS in the National Healthcare Surveys Registry. At the moment, any EC, EH, or CAH can register with us, but due to infrastructure constraints, we only ask registrants that are sampled in our surveys to send us EHR data. And currently, the Hospital Care Survey is the only survey currently collecting EHR data in the format of our version, CDA version 1.2, from registrants that are sampled hospitals. And we have over 100 EHR products certified to our CDA version 1.2 IG, including most of the largest EHR vendors. Next slide, please. We are building infrastructure and enhancing capacity to support EHR data collection. As part of the CDC data modernization initiative, we are migrating to the cloud for the collection, processing, and storing of our EHR and claims data. Also, as part of the CDC DMI, we are conducting a pilot test to test our FHIR app on several providers and build a data lake at CDC to process and store this data, and also trying to develop governance for the sharing of for the EHR data with other CDC programs. Next slide, please. Want to end with our vision for the future? We hope to utilize all National Healthcare Survey registrants, providers, and hospitals to submit data to us in the future using the FHIR IG that we're developing so that we can continue to create nationally representative data sets and also develop surveillance and research data sets. We hope to build a data lake at CDC to share with other CDC programs the EHR data collected by the National Healthcare Surveys. By having the capacity to obtain all visits for providers and hospitals, we can make timely and reliable estimates for conditions resulting from public health emergencies and even rare conditions. And we'd like to continue our methodological work, explore other data linkages to Medicaid and Veteran Affairs data, continue our natural language processing and algorithm development work for opioid and other drug encounters, social determinants of health, and other medical conditions, and explore use of privacy-preserving record linkage and development of synthetic data for public and restricted use files. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present about the National Healthcare Surveys, and I'm happy to take your questions.
Great, thank you very much, Carol, for that incredibly succinct overview. You know, as you well indicated there, this is a very different data set and use from the other public health criterion that we have reviewed. I see that Arian has his hand up. So Arian, please.
Yeah, thank you. So again, thank you for the presentation. Really, really helpful. The current F criteria here reference the 1.0 or the 1.something guide. So it just says release one right now, a 2014 guide. And it sounds like you've got later guides that are more streamlined. And then you also have the FHIR guide. As we think about certification criteria for public health data systems, it sounds like your preference would be to see industry move to the latest implementation guide. And it also sounds like you have a preference for the FHIR-based guide, or maybe I'm reading too much into that portion of your presentation.
No, I think that is correct. We have a number of releases. We started out with 1.0. We have 1.1, 1.2. Most of the products that we have that are certified are to 1.2.
Yeah.
And we actually have a 2.1, and now we're up to release 3. The vendors, there have been no products at this point certified to anything but the 1.2.
Yeah. So I'm just looking at the criteria right now, and right now the criteria reference 1.0. They optionally reference 1.2, which sounds like where the majority of certifications are, and then you're SVAPed to release 3. But nobody's taken you up on the offer to go to release.
Right.
Got it.
Right. I guess I should give a little history. When we developed the IG, again, these data collections were all done on, we did medical record abstraction on site. And so basically when we did the first versions of the implementation guide, we just took those elements and put them in and said, okay, we're going to collect this data. And what we found out over time, that we can't collect some of those elements over time. We can't collect it through the EHR because they were subjective. It was somebody looking through notes and going yes or no. So we've learned that we needed to streamline. Also too, the early versions of the IG were set up by survey, and that we decided in 1.2, actually, we made a switch. That version is actually by setting. We thought it would be more, so it's we have a ambulatory and it's inpatient, and also there's an ED. So we made a, we've learned as we've gone along. I think right now though, but it's been very hard. We're small in the scheme of things, our users, because we're sample based right now. Vendors have been reluctant to build products to us. They have, which has been wonderful. But I think moving to USCDI and FHIR, we're trying to go a little bit more mainstream, join other parts of CDC. So yes, our preference is to move to FHIR. We think that that's going to be the way for us in the future.
Thank you so much.
Carol, could you talk a little bit about the sense of scale in terms of how many provider organizations are participating, and are you going to, is the intent to broaden that distribution?
Right. So in the registry, like I said, we had, we currently have about 95,000 ECs and 350 hospitals. We had a lot more, right? But the PI rules have changed. So now we're a bonus. So we've had a lot drop out. But the hope would be with the remaining, that over time and with, you know, building of infrastructure, that we would bring all those 95,000 providers and all those hospitals on and collect the data, not only for use by NCHS, but for other parts of CDC as well. That's our hope.
John?
You. That was John Kansky from the Indiana Health Information Exchange. That was actually a really good up for my question. So this approach and the movement to the cloud and the movement to the standards and FHIR makes total sense to me. It is really a question about, given the challenges, I'm sure, of having consistent coverage across the country, but also given that it's voluntary and the changes in PI that you mentioned, has there been any consideration of trying to fill in gaps or augment the data that's currently getting by leveraging health information exchanges?
No, we've considered it. We're actually trying to augment. We've been currently we're purchasing data from third party vendors to supplement the data we collect. I did some work initially a few years ago with HIEs. And again, we've had some discussions, but it kind of led nowhere. But I think we're open to that in the future. Yes, we would consider. I think, you know, trying to get these data, you know, are difficult. Putting, you know, we go to individual providers. And as you can imagine, working with a physician office, trying to get the interface on, it's a big ordeal. So I think we're open to look, you know, we're looking open to looking to other places where we could possibly get the data. So that would be something. And again, we could revisit that in the future.
Yeah, if there's interest, I might reach out to help broker a discussion of a pilot project or something. Thank you.
No, and again, we'd love that, John. Thank you.
Brian? You're muted, Brent.
Apologies. Carol, two quick questions. I'll ask the more sensitive one first, and you can answer quickly and then we can follow up. But you mentioned Social Security numbers are collected for the ability to longitudinally link data. And a desire to move towards privacy-preserving record linkage methodologies. Is there, and especially with the movement to the cloud, are you doing anything to protect those Social Security numbers, like hashing them as they're received, or creating in the implementation guide a hash of the Social Security number so that you're not collecting, you know, plain text Social Securities?
Right. So we don't always get, I should say, we ask for it. We don't always get it. And sometimes we only get the last four digits. So it's kind of been, we don't always get it. Okay. And I guess the thing too, we're looking into other ways to protect that data. I mean, I can don't want to go into all, but the way it's stored and so forth, it is locked down as you can imagine. But again,
And are those, and I guess just pointedly, are those data elements shared with researchers or are those just used internally?
No. So the data, the linkage variables are not shared with researchers, and there is no intention to share that data. Okay. It will only be used for linkage purposes.
My second question, thank you, is kind of a follow-on to Jillian's. How many, it seems like there has to be a perfect alignment of people who are randomly selected for survey and people who have a certified technology of that join, how many are actually today able to send you automated electronic record system extracts? I imagine it's a relatively small number.
Right. We're only, as I said in my remarks, we're only collecting it for the National Hospital Care Survey. At the moment, we have about 50 hospitals that are in the sample. Now, and this is another, right? I think you were asking for problems. Actually getting the data is we only probably get it from half. We've had a really hard time also getting the data from even a sampled hospital that's in the registry. We do a lot of one-on-one work with them, but even just getting the approvals for them to send the data, sometimes we don't get it because we can't get the approvals. We're on production schedules, we have timelines. So that has been difficult. We do testing and validation with the hospitals. And again, there's been a lot of issues with the data quality when we do the testing and validation. So there's a lot of work with the hospital, with their vendor. A recent example, we had several hospitals send us data, and there was no identifier in the header to identify where the data came from. So we had to go back, and it was two different vendors, and it has been corrected, but we had to work to get that corrected. So there's a lot of back and forth, even just to get the data, as you can imagine.
And then from our experience getting CDAs from the hospitals in our jurisdiction, even when you get the data, when you actually dig into it, there are a lot of empty fields that were customized during the implementation and aren't appropriately extracting out what you thought they were going to be abstracting for you. So.
Right. And that was one thing too, in the certification process, there's no context-based testing for us. It's not required. So we didn't have it. So we get the format is correct, but the shells that wasn't there. So I know we're currently getting some data from health centers. And I know I was talking to staff preparing to come today, and they were telling me that things aren't where, like diagnoses, active problems, they were looking and they couldn't find them in the field where they were. But subsequently we looked and they were in a different spot. So we did find them, but not where they were supposed to be. So we have issues like that as well. The custom elements that we want, that they usually, they're not there. So
okay.
Thank
you so much. We may want to follow up with you as we make thoughts around next level, deeper certification, going into the content validation rather than just structural validation, so that there's more consistency. It might be useful to follow up with your staff to see what, how that implementation guide could be translated into certification criteria for the senders.
That would be great. I think another thing, if I could just, is also too, the competing sort of standards. We historically at NCHS have put out our diagnoses in ICD. And so when we approach hospitals, we asked if they could get, we could get the diagnoses in ICD-10-CM. And that has been sort of hit or miss too. We get them in SNOMED and have to convert, which we do, but as you know, there's information that's lost. And we've been recently working with medication data. And again, we get the data in RxNorm, Multnom, NCD. Again, NCDB, we're going to
everything.
And again, it's doable. We are doing it, but it would be really nice if you know we could specify and say RxNorm and get the data there. It takes a lot of, as you know, time to put this all together, and there's always, you know, information that's lost when trying to convert. So that's been another issue, but we're doing the best we can.
Sounds like there's some opportunities there, for sure. Hans?
Thank you. I have a couple of small questions. One is that, do you see that the CDA-based release 3 that is currently in ASVAB, that from your perspective is the last CDA-based specification that you're shifting everything moving forward to the FHIR-based approach, or do you see that there still is a potential release after it that's CDA-based?
I think right now, like I said, release 3 is, I think we're seeing moving to FHIR. I think that's where I think we want to go. And again, as I mentioned in my remarks, we've been part of the CDC MedMorph project that's been going on trying to improve getting data to public health. So I think that's where we see ourselves going is to FHIR.
And based on that, with the FHIR-based approach that builds on MedMorph, do you see that the submission process, the acquisition of the data and the submission process is intended to follow the entire guide? Or do you see is that the report itself, the survey itself, is really the core of it and the method by which that's being shared, obtained, acquired, and shared with CDC is still open?
Again, we're aligning, and I think that's really a fundamental shift too. In moving to the FHIR guide, we really aligned more with USCDI. So in some sense, we dropped elements that we expected payment was one of them. But again, we felt it was better to align ourselves more with the standard, that we had a better chance of getting the data. And then over time, as the USCDI, you know, changes, we could make requests for adding elements. I think our hope is that, again, too, that there's a lot of requests for data, particularly for hospitals and physicians, and that if we could streamline what we're asking, bring it in, and then share it with other parts of CDC, that would be great strides, less burden for the provider. And also, I think the EHR vendors would be more likely to work with us and support what we're trying to do, so they didn't have to do custom interface for our surveys.
Yeah, and maybe to clarify my question, it was not as much focused on the report itself, the content, and more of the exchange transport and methods to acquire data, because the MedMorph ECR or more a particular style of acquiring the data that uses the FHIR-based APIs of mm-hmm. the EHRs. And that may or may not for certain parties be the most appropriate way to get it. Other ones might say is that provide me the specification of the data, like today with the CDA, in FHIR format. And then at that point in time, I'll figure out how to get the data as long as there's an agreed to submission that may not follow all aspects of MedMorph. And that's where I was trying to understand, is the intent to really strictly stick to MedMorph as is, or focus primarily on the content, i.e. the equivalent of CDA, and then moving forward in FHIR, and let the method by which have more flexibility?
I think at this point, I guess I don't know if I can really answer. We're just in the midst of doing our FHIR pilot. So we're actually trying to recruit providers to do it. So I'm not quite sure if I could answer. I think we need to see how it goes with just doing it on a few providers. I think we're open though to how can we best get this data. And if it's not using exactly what's, the MedMorph architecture, I think we can make that decision down the line, but I think it's truly, how do we get this data and do it with the least burden on the provider and the vendor, so we can, get the information that we need to put out the official statistics that we're supposed to produce. So
I appreciate that. Yeah, and I would agree is that it's the report, the content, the payload is the critical part that we all align on. There are some potential variations as we learn that some may want to take advantage of based on their source systems that they have. That's where I was looking. Thank you.
Any other questions for Carol? Carol, thank you so much for coming on. You're welcome to stay on, but we will be shifting over to putting together our proposed recommendations. You are under no obligation to stay on, although you would be most welcome.
There is much sausage that will be made in the next hour. Carol, thank you so much. That was fantastic.
Thank you so much and appreciate the opportunity. And if there's any other questions, please reach out to me. Thanks so much. I think I'm going to drop off.
Okay, thank you. Okay, well, with that, we will be, I think we've got quite a bit of time today to really start working through the proposed recommendations on the worksheet and the comments. I'm trying to remember where we left off last time. I think we were talking about, we were in syndromic surveillance.
So I think, Liz, have we moved some of the content over to the transmittal? Maybe we can just cover where we are right now in terms of, I went back and marked a bunch of stuff that was ready to be moved over to transmittal versus stuff that still warrants continued discussion. Is Liz on today?
I'm here.
Okay, cool.
I have not transferred it over, okay. But I will today.
Got it. Cool.
Could we just quickly review which ones we agreed that would be transferred over? Yep. Just quick highlight.
Oh, of course. All right.
Arian, you had marked the ones that you are ready to transfer as transfer, right?
Yep.
Perfect.
All right. So, woo.
Yeah.
I'm impressed. All right, good. Trying to move my, there we go. So let's go these are mostly the ones that we've already gone over multiple times. So first one related to immunization registries, Liz, if we can just move over one little bit. All right, cool. One is generally, I put in a general overview set of criteria, and we should figure out how we want to handle this particular issue. Whether we want to make recommendations that ONC create certification programs for public health broadly, or make more specific recommendations related to each of the F criteria. But here there are gaps in the existing certification criteria where we want to add transport to the existing criteria. So we recommend that ONC coordinate with public health, and we got to find the right word for public health stakeholders that includes
stakeholders,
adults, CSTE, ASTHO, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we've got a set of public health actors, we might want Jillian to create a defined term and then reference that defined term throughout the document. The intent here is that ONC would coordinate with, in this case, ERA, would coordinate with STILTS and other CDC, other folks who have expertise and interest in the correct running of immunization registry. So this one is, and I think we would look at Hans's modification. The intent of this one is let's also certify to the transport spec as well as the content spec, both for immunization reporting and query retrieve. So.
And Arian, to clarify, both the comments in one and four and five, rows four and five, numbers two and three, yep. Not realizing yet what the G column around transfer exactly meant. There seemed to be an opportunity to consolidate. So that's where the comment came from. We can keep it separate, or we can combine it as suggested.
Yeah, I mean, we ultimately want to, once we get this over into transmittal land, we want to have a transmittal that reads well. So
Just as a reminder, public health gets to determine the transport mechanism.
No doubt. This is a question of certification criteria, where the certification criteria do not currently include certification to any transport.
But I want to make sure that the recommendation clearly clarifies that public health has the right and responsibility to select and mandate the transport criterion for its jurisdiction. It might be one of a number of flavors, but we cannot be limited to a single transport standard.
Yeah, this again gets into what is certification, which probably warrants discussion. But again, the notion of certification is that we're certifying to a floor in ways that that would improve the ability of public health of public health authorities to be able to serve their mission. Raising the floor does not mean that every jurisdiction has to use the floor. It does mean that jurisdictions that don't use the floor will have more special effort than jurisdictions that do use the floor. It also does not limit, raising the floor does not limit local jurisdictions from raising the ceiling. Raising the ceiling again requires more effort than sticking with the floor, but there are often reasons associated with SFAP and others to raise the ceiling. So I don't think anything that we're talking about for certification binds organizations from using things that are not certified, in the same way that the EHR certification program does not bind organizations from using capabilities that are certified. There are some cases where there are programmatics that may specifically tie back to certification. These days for CMS, we have required the use of certified technology, and in only limited situations have we required the use of the actual certified standard.
However, part of the reason that we're here is because of challenges or issues that providers have raised with public health putting requirements that are legitimate requirements under current jurisdictional law that are not contained in certification criterion. So the recommendation really does need to include language that recognizes the role and responsibility of public health jurisdictions to be able to designate what they need.
Yeah, I think this topic belongs in an overview section or a general section and not attached to each bit of certification. Again, you could, as a task force member, say that we should not certify to a transport mechanism, and then we could have that conversation, because you want to preserve the ability to select your own transport mechanism and you fear that certification would limit your ability to select a transport mechanism. I think we heard from in the public health in the immunization hearing that in most cases, most jurisdictions and most EHRs were in fact using the CDC transport implementation guide, and that it would be useful to certify to that guide. I'm going to go to Bryant, who's got his hand up. I don't know, Steve, put your hand up.
Yeah, well, I think it's related. I just wanted to emphasize that the floor problem is and the exact wording in the certification is problematic, in that, the federal rule states that the state and local health jurisdictions can determine the transport mechanism. The certification has ors around different transport mechanisms that can be included in the process for the EHR vendor to get certified. And when there's an or, the vendors tend to take it literally and only do one of the transport mechanisms, thereby effectively eliminating the ability of the state or jurisdiction to make that self-determination of what's the most efficient, cost-effective transport mechanism in their jurisdiction. And it becomes We need to get these two things aligned, Arian.
Yeah, well, no doubt. If there is an alternative transport mechanism that has an implementation guide around it, that would be a potentially useful thing to
put. There is, and the vendors have all chosen to treat it at literally, it was written that way in the certification process. They can do this one or this one to get certified. They don't have to do both of them, thereby being ready for whatever jurisdiction. And then, as you said, that creates customization dilemmas in those jurisdictions that have chosen the other of the two.
Hans has his hand up.
This is always a hard topic because on the one hand, there's clearly need that the needs of different jurisdictions authorities are different. And that can create variation that in overall a provider level technology developers to support them is creating challenges. So I think the part of the recommendations that is critical, that it's coordination and alignment on these methods so that solutions are being found. That if you look at the case reporting APHL AIMS flow, where you have a couple of different options to get the same content across, and that where by way of mechanisms like a hub, that there is opportunity to have flexibility, that we need to figure that out, where you can have the flexibility and where we can still get the alignment. So I think coordination is critical. It's not in that sense this is the only way in which it can be done at a national level, that we figure that out on how that works. So that balance needs to be maintained. Otherwise, we're going to continue to have a large set of variations that are probably not necessary to maintain.
I just want to point out, I'm reading the actual certification criteria, clarification sub-bullet 3, while no transport standard is required for this criterion, an expert panel convened by CDC and ERA has recommended a SOAP-based standard for transport of immunization data. So right now, the current state is that there are no transport requirements that are enshrined in certification. And all this recommendation is recommending is that we add a transport requirement to the set of certification criteria. Jillian.
Yeah, I just want to go bring up a point that you mentioned briefly around this, and maybe what we pull transport transport specifications to more of an overarching statement around this that would cover all criteria.
So that's the approach that I would recommend as well. I feel like if each attempt to add certification gets involved into a debate on states and localities' flexibility and legal ability to do something else, then that's something that really belongs in an overarching comment about what's the role of certification, what's the authority of public health authority. And what's the intent of a certification program? So the intent of a certification program is to help public health do its mission cheaper, faster, and more effectively. Clearly, if we are recommending certification criteria that do not, in fact, help public health do their job cheaper, faster, and more effectively, we should not make those recommendations. The notion here is that by certifying both parties to a common transport standard, that we would reduce the needs of states to be able to create their own transport requirements, and that would help states and localities get their job done cheaper, faster, and more effectively. If we don't believe that's true, we should not make the recommendation. But we should, as an overview, make it clear what the role of certification is. Welcome anybody who wants to write that into the overview section. I'm more than happy to take a pass at that, and that we can consider in a subsequent meeting.
Yeah, I think to Brian's point, we just want to make sure that we have the state of flexibility and the authority, though, to go to higher standards as they become available.
Yeah,
and
we're not. That's right. That's also enshrined in SFAP, and we should re-endorse the notion of SFAP, that creating a floor does not. Creating a floor is intended to create a common mechanism. It is not intended to limit the ability of STILTS or other public health authorities from mutually agreeing on or endorsing or requiring higher forms of interoperability. It also, again, just to be super clear, does not create an assumption that every stilt will use the common floor. It's just a recognition that stilts that don't use the common floor will find the sledding harder going than stilts that do. All right, let's go to the next criterion. So I'm sort of getting lost between Hans's revision and the original one. Okay, cool. So we got two recommendations here. That one of which I think probably should be lifted out into a more general purpose one. So the first one is that I think we heard testimony from ERA that there is indeed state there's still variance in terms of the use of the existing HL7 implementation guide. I got to find the actual ERA report because I wasn't able to find the ERA report that was referenced on their public website. But if you go through the variation noted in that ERA report, most of it is due to inventory requirements and consent requirements. And then I think we also heard that there is increasing variance in the use of more specific race ethnicity tracking. And so that forms these two requirements, one of which is more general purpose than the other. Specific to immunization, we recommend that ONC coordinate with, and again, we got to find our term of art, to update the immunization implementation specification to better support predictable variations and inventory and consent requirements. Potentially we could add other state by state or locality by locality variation. And then the second one is that same recommendation relative to a more expansive race ethnicity coding system. And again, I want to remind people that the state of play is that race and ethnicity is coded to the full CDC code set. So there are no requirements to only use the OMB 5+2, but the only subset that is certified to is the OMB 5+2, which creates a floor that is too low in the nation. And so we recommend, we're proposing recommending that ONC work with other relevant organizations to create a slightly more expansive race and ethnicity coding system that can serve as the need for a common floor and reduce the need for jurisdictional variation. Comments, questions? All right. There's a lot going on in the chat. Fourth one is, I think we recognize that there are two current test methods that are noted in certification. One was the original immunization test method. Since the original immunization test method was promulgated, ERA in conjunction with HIMSS created the HIMSS IIP set of test methods and associated implementation guidance. And ONC in their current certification criteria allow for use of either test method. This recommendation states that ONC should deprecate the non-HIMSS IIP test method and standardize on the HIMSS IIP test method. Questions, comments? Noam says it's HIMSS ERA IIP, but if you go to the ERA site, it's actually labeled HIMSS IIP. So I use the terminology that ERA uses. Ike.
Quick question. Yeah, sorry, I was unmuting. Quick question on what is the impact of the changing in the test criterion on public health, on the public health side?
So My understanding from the ERA presentation is that most EHRs already certify to the HIMSS IP certification criteria or test methods, and that most public health data systems, most immunization information systems already align to the HIMSS IP certification criteria. I believe there will always be corner cases, but the ERA criteria are the criteria that almost everybody uses, and the only reason that the original test method exists is that ONC has been relatively conservative in its regulatory process to not remove criteria and instead allow folks to voluntarily adopt. It was easier for ONC to preserve methods to voluntarily adopt the HIMSS IAP criteria than it was for them to remove the older method. Hans has his hand up, and he may have some.
I just have a follow on that. So abstracting that concept, a more general recommendation might be to look at revising the testing criterion across the board to better reflect compatibility of the test criterion with existing public health data systems.
Yeah. So I agree with that. That is the ERA HIMSS IIP criteria. So the intent of the ERA criteria was to look at real world implementation and create an implementation guide and test methods that harmonize to the real world experience for both immunization actors,
right,
actors and
understood. I was looking at conceptually expanding that to be syndromic surveillance or other exchanges that are occurring as well.
Yep, that's right.
Obviously not the same tool.
That makes sense. I think we do have specific recommendations in each of those areas that we do we effectively do a rev to look at real world, real world experience, and rev to where we have variation. Hans.
Yes, I have just a clarifying question around this. There are indeed a number of systems that use HIMSS IP, but there are others that are not necessarily. So the question there becomes from a community perspective, if we go that route, would that require people to be part of HIMSS IIP? Or is it going to be flown into existing ACB? So I think we want to focus on that the method is being adopted in such a way that doesn't incur additional efforts otherwise to do.
I was thoughtful as I was constructing that language of that point. I think the way that the language reads states that. So we recognize the HIMSS IIP test method as the test method used for certification and deprecate the current primary test method. We're not saying in this recommendation that we use the HIMSS IIP ERA test program and ACBs, that we're really talking about adopting the test method. But Hans, happy to accept any friendly amendments here.
I wanted to ponder that a little bit because the term came clear, but I'm not sure whether everybody interprets that way. I'm trying to figure out how to make sure that it's not misinterpreted.
Yeah, well, this may be an area to say, but for clarity, we intend when there's what I have a tendency as I think people who have worked with me before. Sometimes to be hyper nuanced in how I'm using language that may be clear, maybe crystal clear only in my head about how hyper nuanced I'm using the language. So this may be an area where we might want to put a for clarity. All right. Item five. Are these really the only ones that have been noted as transferred? Okay, cool.
Yep, I filtered through.
Gotcha. All right, item five. recommend that any certification criteria for public health data systems interoperability be modular and provide health authorities maximal flexibility in selecting certified technology, which may be owned or managed or consumed as a service and or through intermediaries, state HIEs, APHL, and others, according to legal policy procurement rules governing public health. Ike suggests adding practices, legal policy procurement rules and practices. Governing public health. So basically, we intend certification criteria to be modular. We intend the certification criteria to allow public health agencies and authorities to mix and match certified technology in order to serve the public health mission. And we recognize that the choice of technology and the deployment of technology is going to follow legal policy practice and procurement rules. John.
Thanks. Yeah, I like and support this recommendation. I added a observation which references this, which I believe is separate, but just calling that out. It's basically, speaking of hyper-nuanced, trying to suggest that, yes, this is a good recommendation, but even if the world does what this recommendation says, there are potential policy barriers that can prevent a state or jurisdiction from taking advantage of this flexibility. And what we might recommend the ONC do about that is a different question, but I just wanted to call out that observation is on like row 70 or something like that, if you see it as related.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is going to be an area where the answer is it depends. If the policy barriers are state law, then ONC is not going to be able to do anything about state law. If the policy barriers are, for example, the common rules associated with minimum necessary under HIPAA, that would be an area where I think it would be appropriate for us to make recommendations that ONC work with OCR to create Jillian, I always forget the plethora of acronyms associated with the national public health authorities, the public health law. What's the national public health law forum?
Network
for Public Health Law. Good one, Network Rachel.
NPHL. Thank you. So acronym translation. NPHL. ONC, NPHL, OCR would be appropriate actors to be able to streamline the federal. Policy associated with that there may be limitations. So John, that's kind of how I would think about that, is if there are specific limitations that are in ONC's purview to do anything about, then that would be appropriate. If the limitations that you have are state law based limitations, then that's not going to be a helpful thing for us to comment on.
Well, speaking specifically state law or state policy issue that you referenced, I've learned that task force recommendations, obviously you have to stay within your scope, and you have to consider that ONC only has its scope, and therefore recommendations range from laser focused and implementable to wimpy and vague. And we try to avoid the wimpy and vague recommendations. And at the risk of asking the task force to consider vague and wimpy, I think that ONC might, within its purview, at least direct some attention to the variations in state law that stand as barriers to the goal of complete public health reporting, and possibly go so far as to say, hey, here's some guidance on what appear to be best practices. That's the best I got.
Yeah, guidance on best practices, I think, may be appropriate. If there are specific items If there are specific items that are known best practices where we can create guidance and we can create specific recommendations, I think that's a reasonable thing for us to consider. I think the general statement that that states should behave themselves will A, not be able to pass this task force, and B, not be implementable in practice.
Yeah, last comment, and then I'll let it go, is that if we, you know, if some of the smart people on the task force put energy into thinking about this, for I think it's probably about 4F criteria really might pertain to, we could probably craft something more specific, but it sounds like a lot of work, and probably what I'm trying to suggest would be done outside the task force.
Yep. Cool. Okay. So I think what we heard in this review is the need to create some preamble or some overarching text on the role of certification, and on the reality that public health authorities are indeed public health authorities that are duly designated under state law. And in our federal system, have the rights that they are granted, and that the intent of a certification program is to reduce implementation burden and serve the public health mission. But that doing so does it in no way limits the ability of states and localities as authorized to do other things. Joe.
Yeah. Thinking about that, I keep thinking about emission standards for cars and how much what we're proposing is tied to the reality of what's out there, what public health agencies are using out there right now. If you change emission standards for cars, it's going to take years to get the cars off the road that that fall below that standard. And you've got to set a standard where all cars being sold can meet that standard to do that migration. So you can't set a standard. It's going to be too expensive for people to implement as they buy into a new system. And you've got to give enough lead time that the folks who have old systems and aren't going to meet the standard can bring it up to standard. And I don't know the field enough to have a good sense of whether what we're proposing is appropriate to the field, appropriate to it, when we're saying, yeah, everybody should do this and we all can be on board with, yeah, we should be more standard. We should all, you know, meet these new standards because it's going to make everything work more efficiently. But part of the picture is what's out there now and how long is it going to take to get to the standard? How much is it going to cost to get to the standard?
Thanks, Joe. Why don't we switch? So first of all, are there objections to taking this material with any modifications that we've discussed to a transmittal draft? And again, that changes nothing in terms of our ability to change language, change wording, et cetera. It's just making the primary, the transmittal draft, where we can read the material together as a more coordinated set of recommendations, for example, for immunization. So any objections to moving this over to the transmittal draft? Wait two beats. Okay. Can we move to we're moving to overarching. So we've already discussed this one. Okay, let's go scroll down one. And this is one where there's a noted observation, but noted recommendations. Hans is making a recommendation that, and I actually think this one probably is ready to move forward to the transmittal, that we start aligning on the USA guide relative to address information associated with patient matching. If we go on to the next one, so comments on that one. Okay, if we go on to the next one, Vivian, recommend specified functional use of systems in lieu of certifying a system that has capability required. So 63, I think, was the one that we noted was the duplicate. 6 and 63. So I think 6 is the one that I don't actually have any recommendations. And then 63, why don't we hold until we get down to 63? Jamie makes recommendations on, and this is duplicative with the other recommendation that we just discussed on race, ethnicity, preferred language, and SOGI data. So we do have in US CDI V3 significant revisions to SOGI information. Stephen, it's been so long since we did the USCDI portion of the task force. I do not remember the state of preferred language in USCDI V3. If you're able to comment, maybe you
can I don't think it's in there. I'll go double check.
Okay, cool.
Can whoever's driving expand the window under the observations? I remember typing a comment in this one.
Yep. Okay. Erin has her hand up.
Yeah. Hi. I just wanted to, clarify the comment that I or the observation I made on this one. I believe that the current implementation guide that's out, the cross paradigm implementation guide that's out for ballot right now, that's addressing gender identity, sex for clinical use, and so forth. It does allow or speak to specific ability to pre-adopt. Mm-hmm. Basically, I'm just correcting my observation here.
Okay.
I think that with that, though, there would likely need to be probably specific guidance to ensure that pre-adoption is done in a standard way if it was going in that direction. But
okay, and that would form, I think, this is kind of where I was going in this conversation of USCDI V3, is that there are areas where we have made substantial progress in USCDI V3, and we could handle some of the stuff with a catch-all reference to USCDI V3 with respect, for example, to gender identity and sex for clinical use and reported sex and gender, which were activities that we. Or clarifications that we went in depth on in USCDI V3. There is the much more difficult, weirdly much more difficult area of common subsets for race and ethnicity, where as far as I can tell, everyone recognizes that the OMB criteria are problematic. and yet I don't actually know what the current status is for aligning to a better common subset. Stephen, I saw you pointed something for USCDI 3 for preferred language. It is in USCDI V3. Cool.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, it's back in V1 also.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Okay. So I think we're there on preferred language. In USCDI, and then that would again warrant updating because all of the implementation guides for public health were done pre-USCDI, that would warrant re-looking at implementation guidance for alignment to USCDI V3, and that would in the area of preferred language would pull preferred language in. So I think we're actually in relatively good shape in terms of having the overarching policy framework in everywhere but race and ethnicity expansive subsets. Brian.
I was just gonna say, I think that CDC has convened a task force which is working to publish and expand out those race and ethnicities, but we need to make sure that we figure out how to be future proof as those become published, but also, I said this before, I think that in some criteria, it may not go far enough. And we, you know, I think it's one of those things that will continue to evolve to get to the right place eventually. So I hope that we don't end up with another sticking point in time that we look back at 2022 is the time we got stuck with that particular vision of race and ethnicity instead of being able to evolve forward.
Yeah, well, definitely the SVAP, you know, aligning race and ethnicity subsets under the SVAP would be useful. And then I think the structural issue that everyone's struggling with is that if we have a race and ethnicity subset that is needed for public health and a different one, a smaller one, that is where EHRs are certified to, we know what the end of that story looks like, which is, yeah, we can send over the expansive subsets in our, and certify to sending over the expansive subsets in our public health implementation guides, but we will not in fact collect expansive information. Hans, you have some comments here.
On the note of whether these particular ones should be part of ASVAB, vocabulary in general has the opportunity to go more quickly without being mentioned in ASVAB. So I think we need to look at what parts are really the vocabulary, the extensions of the code sets, the value sets that are in play that can take advantage of being treated like vocabulary, SNOMED, LOINC, et cetera, you can keep on adding and have a more current version that you can start to use versus what do you do in the actual standard where you may, in certain areas, create more specific value sets around it. But by having a code system that can expand over time, I think we have to be careful about that. Where we ask to do that to be done.
I don't think that's our problem. Yeah, I don't think that's our problem because I think if you look at what's currently required in certification, the full CDC vocabulary set is required in, you know, aligning to the full CDC vocabulary set is required in certification. And if you look at the full CDC value set, it is hard to believe that that value set is anything but broad and expansive.
It is not enough.
The issue is that, in fact, we limit in certification to the OMB subset, and that forms the boundary for data collection. All right, well, let's move on. I think we got enough to work. Yeah. So seeing good comments on the move for OMB to look at revision to the OMB subset. And so there's no shortage of work going on here. There's no shortage of recognition that it's a problem. There is a shortage of an actual subset that we can point to. Jillian.
So I was just waiting to comment on this next observation.
Cool. So this next observation I would propose that we note this one as out of scope.
Agreed. That was my comment.
Yeah. Which is not to say that it isn't useful, but it is not specifically relating to. Yeah, Liz, we need to add the out of scope public health topic, but it is not specifically related to the F criteria or public health data certification. Yeah. So unless there's profound objections to noting this one as out of scope, I will suggest we move on. I'll wait a couple of beats and let's move down to the next one. I'm going to suggest that we handle this one with our overarching in what is the intent of certification. I think we will, as an editorial and as a task force co-chair, I think we will drive ourselves crazy in predictable positions. This is something I started this task force observing. I think we'll drive ourselves crazy with predictable positions. We can make the case that there is too much jurisdictional variation. We can make the case that EHR vendors and provider organizations do not in fact offer the data that they need to. And that the blame for lack of good quality data for public health lies with either of those two extremes. Our goal as a task force is to create a common floor that reduces burden both for EHR developers and providers and burden for public health and helps public health better serve the mission. And so areas where we focus on what's a natural place to raise the floor are going to be productive areas. Areas where we focus on limiting the ability of EHR vendors to do X or Y, or limiting the ability of public health authorities to do X or Y, are not going to be productive. So that's an editorial, but I think it's an editorial. It's an editorial founded in seeing this debate play out 10,000 times and trying to chart a course towards some common subset. okay, Les has a overarching comment. So I think we did move to overarching combined with recommendations to convene to create standards for. Okay, so what we want here, and that we discussed this last time, is we don't have a standard. We do have some underlying. Well, we don't have an implementation guide. We do have some underlying standards, including CDS hooks. What we've observed is that there is a role to play. And I think we saw this play out in Zika. There is a useful role to play for public health to push informational information to provider organizations. And there is a role for public health to provide decision support or to make decision support available to EHR actors. And that we don't currently have standards and implementation guidance that are fit for purpose for those two purposes. And so what we'd like to do is create an overarching recommendation that ONC use its convening authority to convene public health stakeholders, whatever our approved term is for that, to standards development organizations to explore and create implementation guidance, pilot and test it, and if appropriate, sometime in the future, create certification programs. So I think we've identified this as a need, as something that may want to have happen where we don't have standards on the ground. But we do need to create recommendation language. Les, if he's on, I think is invited to create that. If I have time, I may do the work as well. So 41, I think, gets into the unhelpful debates. Go ahead. Does somebody want to?
Comment on the last before you move on. I think that although Les, I agree with you that CDS hooks would be ideal. The fact that the immunization exchange is the state of the art is a 251 message is going to make it difficult to leverage that in the short term, I think. But if what you're recommending is that there be a convening and a future work moving towards leveraging of CDS hooks once those FHIR APIs can be leveraged by an IaaS API.
Yeah, that's exactly the intent. Is we do not have a fit for purpose standard right now. So there is nothing to certify to. I think we recognize that, as we saw in Zika, I think we recognize that providing decision support that is related to public health crises, we saw in the early days of COVID as well, is an important function of public health. And so therefore, what I believe we would like to recommend is that ONC use its convening authority to convene stakeholders to explore standards and appropriate implementation guidance. CDS hooks would seem like it would be a natural choice. I don't think we want at this stage to name CDS hooks except as one of the choices that ONC might want to consider. Les?
I'd just go back and say that vaccine forecasting is really decision support.
That's right.
And that if we could even begin with using the same language across different areas, we would make some progress. But in this particular situation, as we're talking about an IIS returning a vaccine forecast to an EHR, we definitely need to have some discussions as to what the best way would be to do that.
Yep.
And that CDS hooks is a logical standard for that, and that we need to move away from the idea that every IIS does this differently. Or yep. Does it in text only format?
Right. So again, I think we're saying we've identified this as a common public health need. We see it in vaccine forecasting. We saw it in Zika. We saw it in COVID.
In particular in case reporting. Yep. You know, when we want to have two-way communication, the pathway back into the EHR does need to be specified, that the current approach to specifying that as a direct message probably doesn't get that in front of the physician.
Yep. Perfect. Cool. So I think we have a path forward. I think Les has volunteered. Thank you, Les, to draft some language. And once we have that language drafted, we will review it and consider it for going forward. Both Hans and Noam note that agreeing on a common go forward does not mean that we have to completely deprecate the existing things that are certified against. But you know, we'd want to provide a path forward. All right, let's go to, so 41 is the area that I think we just want to observe and move on with, unless we can turn this into recommendations. And again, I think the recommendation that wants to have to happen here is the recommendation of the intent or purpose of the certification program to raise the floor and reduce implementation burden and the ability of public health to meet its mission without in any way implying a limit on public health authority. All right, let's go on to the next. Oh, we're in public comment time. Time flies. So let us go to public comment. And then after public comment, there's one of these that I want to move forward to, because I think it actually starts to get the core of what we're talking about here.
All right. Thanks, Arianne. We're going to now open up our meeting for public comments. If you're on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're on the phone only, press star 9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause for a moment to see if anyone raises their hand. Not seeing any hands raised, Arianne, so I'll turn it back to you and Jillian.
Awesome. All right, Liz, if we can put back the spreadsheet. And by the way, the use of the chat feature, if you're using that, is another way to meaningfully engage in the conversation, and is strongly encouraged. Okay, so 42. This was in response to some of the comment that we heard relative to trigger criteria, LOINC subsets, early days procedure and diagnosis codes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have certification criteria to conform to value sets. We do not currently have certification criteria that address updating value sets. So here we're making proposing recommendations to certify to the ability of systems to update value sets, that ONC in conjunction with relevant stakeholders create operating rules for the updating of value sets, and that ONC work with federal partners and relevant stakeholders to create mechanisms that encourage provider organizations to adhere to those operating rules. So the notion of an operating rule comes from the HIPAA transaction world, where there are well-recognized operating rules for example, eligibility, use of eligibility, that sit above the implementation guidance and make recommendations related to, for example, the transaction times that an eligibility transaction may take. Here, I think what we're looking for is recency of updates of value sets, same kind of thing for trigger conditions, for ECR. Comments? Okay, I'm going to propose, let's move past 43 because there's one that I want to get to.
So are we moving 42 over then?
I think we have not heard objection to moving 42 over.
Arian, on 42, we may need to have a little bit of clarifying language that that requires some work on what are the tools, what are the standards to get that data across, which are not always well-defined yet.
Not always well-defined, and this may be an area where, as we've done in the past, we start with functional criteria,
right.
Show the ability to do the update, and then we get to use of the associated fire value set standard or other named implementation guidance. Okay, so here, 44 is the one that I've been talking about. I don't think we're gonna have time to drain this one, but this is a broad overarching set of criteria or recommendation A, that ONC establish certification program for public health data systems with public health data system analogs to the existing F criteria, along with new certification criteria for TEF queries supporting case investigations. We could potentially punt that one because I do have another one that's associated with TEF queries supporting case investigations. Recommend that ONC work with CDC and other federal agencies to yada, yada, yada. That any federal program tied to certification contemplate the timeline disruption, effort, and funding associated with technology modernization to achieve certification. So here, and we could flesh this point out, I think we're responding to the sentiment and feedback, most recently from Joe, but from a number of task force members that we want to recognize that public health data systems are up and running, that data flows are up and running, that we want to reduce variation and reduce burden and improve the ability of public health to achieve their mission, but we don't want to rip and replace existing systems. So that's the intent of the perhaps overly finely written contemplate timeline disruption, effort, and funding associated with technology modernization to achieve certification. The last one is we recommend that ONC work with CDC, and then we have to find the right, Jillian, I'm looking to you to find the right language for stakeholders, public health stakeholders.
It'll be public health authorities.
Do you intend again to exclude CSTE and ASTHO and ERA and et cetera from that term?
No, I think we will. We could say and data partners, perhaps. I'll come up with the right wordsmithing language that will reflect public health authorities.
Cool. Yeah, so, if you can do that, we'll use that as our common tool, our common language. Here, we want to create outcomes and metrics associated with certification, so that we're actually achieving the mission. And again, I think this is an area that. Welcome feedback on, welcome collaborative editing of this recommendation, but this one should be a pretty foundational recommendation, one that we should spend some time talking about next meeting. All right, I think we successfully drained every last minute of time. We will remind us when our I think we've got a couple of one focused on law, one focused on public health developers coming up. Tomorrow we're doing our brief update to HITECH, and we have a month-long push to create final recommendations. So it is absolutely crunch time.
On that cheery note, have a great afternoon or morning, wherever you are, and keep those comments coming in the worksheet. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Take care.